Welcome to a special Credo edition of the Crossroads podcast at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. I'm Jamie Staley, Director of Christian Education. This month, in a series of four podcasts, I will be joined by members of our clergy to explore some of the theological foundations of our faith by delving into four modern creeds from our Book of Confessions. The Book of Confessions is a collection of historical documents and statements of faith that articulate the beliefs and doctrines of the Presbyterian Church USA. It serves as a guidepost for our spiritual journey and communal identity. I hope you can join us as we explore these creeds each week and their relevance to our lives today, seeking deeper understanding and insight into our shared Christian heritage. Welcome to our second Credo Crossroads podcast. We are really excited to have you back. Friends, today I am joined by Reverend Sarah Speed, and she is going to be introducing us to the Brief Statement of Faith. Like I mentioned last week, it would be helpful if you had a copy of the Brief Statement of Faith with you while you are doing this. You can find that online for free. There are a bunch of places that you can download that. And I would encourage you to have either read it beforehand or just have a copy of it in front of you as we are chatting today. I'm really excited to have Sarah with us and excited to hear more about this brief statement of faith, which, as we were chatting, is not super brief. So thank you, Sarah. Can you start off just by telling us a little bit about where this statement came from? How did it happen, and why was it something that we started working on?
Yeah, great question. And friends, I'm excited to be with you all today. So the brief statement of faith, which, as Jamie said, not that brief, was conceived in 1983 and was formally adopted in 1991. But the history for how we got there is actually far earlier. So I'm going to back us up pretty significantly. But you all probably know that Presbyterianism got its root here in this country as folks migrated from Europe, from Scotland and other places, and started building churches here and establishing presbyteries. As the church was growing and thriving, this was similar to the time of the Great Awakening. Churches were being established, presbyteries were being established, but there was also significant tension growing in our country around the issue of slavery. So in 1776, pastors in the North started to cry out about the evils of slavery. There are documents and sermons that were written that say things such as, "We consider the voluntary enslaving of one part of the human race by the other a gross violation of the most precious and sacred rights of human nature and is utterly inconsistent with the law of God." So we have these leaders and thinkers in our faith community in northern churches that are crying out against the evil of slavery, but in the South, that was not the reality. So as I was researching, I stumbled upon some research by one of my former professors, Dr. William Yu, who by his research believes that in the 1860s that there were between 50,000 and 75,000 white Presbyterian slave owners in this country. So as the church was growing and thriving, there were also these growing tensions between the North and the South around the topic of slavery. And eventually, coinciding with the Civil War, our denomination split. So in 1861, the Presbyterian Church split over the matter of slavery and split into two denominations, a Northern and a Southern branch. Those acronyms and names are very similar, yeah. So it can be hard to remember. But there was the PCUS, which was the Presbyterian Church of the United States. That was in the South, originally the Presbyterian Church of the Confederate States. And then there was the UPC USA, United Presbyterian Church of the United States of America, which was the Northern Church. And so that split, even though it happened decades prior to the Brief Statement of Faith, is actually an enormous part of why the Brief Statement of Faith came to be. So when we fast forward, the Civil War happened, 1861 to 1865, about 72 years after the Civil War took place, Presbyterians on the North and the Southern side began having conversations about reunion. And those, sadly, those conversations and negotiations didn't really gain traction. That first effort was in about 1937, so 72 years after the war. And by my research and what I've read, I think undoubtedly continued heightened emotions around slavery and discrimination in America. So theological differences was probably a big factor in why reunion did not take place at that point. However, there's also lots out there that says that there were like legal and logistical issues that were making negotiations hard. So the Northern and Southern churches owned the land property and the buildings and the wealth that were in those property and buildings. And they had separate moderators and they had separate meeting rhythms and stumbled over how to bring those back into one denomination. So then in 1954, a second real attempt was made at having conversations around reuniting the Northern and the Southern Presbyterian denominations. And that was derailed around Brown versus Board of Education. So as these conversations were happening, Brown versus Board of Education came up through the Supreme Court. Schools in the South were desegregated. Tensions were rising in our country. Things felt volatile in the nation, and so these negotiations just fell apart. So finally, in 1983, on June 10th, the Northern and Southern churches of the Presbyterian denomination reunited. And I had so much fun reading and learning about this, but it just sounds like one of those days that was filled with the Spirit. I just got goosebumps reading about it. But there were 14,000 Presbyterians who came to Atlanta and gathered in the World Congress Center to hear the Declaration of Reunion. After 122 years of separation, the Presbyterian Church was reunited. There were parades in the streets with bagpipes and banners. It made the New York Times front page. Wow. The Presbyterian Church had reunited. And it just was, I mean, truly a joyful moment. And at that point, the moderators of those two denominations that came together as one realized that we needed a document that we could share. We needed united language about what it meant to be a Presbyterian that could unite all of these people that were coming together. And so from day one of reunion, one of the charges was, we would like to write a creed. And that is where the brief statement of faith was born from, was from this reunion. People realized, we're coming together. Let's have some language that also unites us. And that's how this began.
Now, I learned on Sunday, and I don't know if you knew before Sunday, that one of our former pastors, Reverend Dr. Oscar McLeod, was involved in this process, which is really cool. And
yes,
something I feel like everybody should know.
Yeah. So when they decided to write the statement of faith, one of the first things that they did was form a committee, right? That's what we Presbyterians do. And so they formed a committee of 21 individuals, and the committee was supposed to be as diverse as it could be, representing different theologies from Northern and Southern branches, from different places geographically, all sorts of men and women. I mean, it was a very intentionally designed committee. And I'm amazed at the task of creating a committee that is intentionally diverse to create language that is uniting is a hard task to do. But one of our former pastors was on that committee, and that was holy work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about so I know that the committee spent a long time. Like, yes. I can't even imagine being on a committee for that long and the tediousness of what that looks like. Just tell us a little bit about kind of that journey that they were on.
Yeah. So the committee, the process of writing the creed took 8 years.
Good grief.
Which is mind-boggling. To me, talk about the spiritual practice of patience. The committee met several times at convention centers and camps and hotels and different places around the country those first few years that they began writing. Mm-hmm. Lots of members were bringing different drafts. They were spending lots of time dissecting words and languages. But before they even got to the draft, they spent some time asking big questions about, like, what do we need included in this statement of faith? What are the issues that are present in our current society that we need to respond to? So it was a slow burn effort of getting it written. A couple of years after they started, they really got hung up on language for God mainly, and were worried that the whole effort was going to fall apart. There was a lot of discussion about whether or not the word Father should be included in the statement for Father God. There were some who thought that Creator was an appropriate substitute. Others disagreed. There was the inclusion of some descriptions for God that were feminine in nature, and that was new. So there was lots of heat around the language and descriptions for God that almost derailed the effort. And then the committee took a breather and gave all of the notes to one person and said, okay, you take a whack at it. And that person spent some time writing. And finally, a couple years after they had began their work, the committee approved a draft. Now, from there, the draft had to go through tons of hoops. There was, it had to go to Presbytery and be defended in front of Presbytery, and Presbytery had to vote to approve it. It had to get approved by 2/3 of the Presbytery, so it went to a national level for approval and then had to go to the local level for approval. They shared it and opened up for feedback before either of those things happened and got 15,000 responses and almost 2,000 long-form responses.
Wow.
And so they had someone that combed through all of that data, and they made edits based on that feedback. So it was from the day that this was a charge for our denomination to the day it was finally adopted, it was an 8-year process.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I know you know, they spent so long on this. What are some of the highlights that you read within the brief statement? What would you say are the main points? What were they trying to get across?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the committee really hoped that this statement of faith would be would really clearly describe some of our values as a Reformed Presbyterian tradition. They felt like Presbyterians had lost their identity. We had split, and we had, at this point in time, there was a significant swing, increased focus on ecumenical efforts. So former Presbyterian campus ministries were becoming interdenomination campus ministries, et cetera. And so the committee felt like people don't know what it means to be a Presbyterian. They don't know what Presbyterians believe. So they wanted it to have some core tenets of Reformed theology. So the statement, one of the things that's unique is it starts and ends with God's sovereignty. And so the first line and the last line echo Romans 8 and say, we believe that in life and in death we belong to God, and everything that comes between is kind of nuanced work. But at the beginning and at the end of this statement is this declaration that in all things we belong to God. And that is something that's unique. That's something I loved about this statement. Another thing that's unique is the way it's structured. So most statements of faith follow the Apostles' Creed, which talks about God, Jesus, Holy Ghost in that order. And this instead followed the apostolic benediction, which starts with Jesus and then goes to God and then goes to the Holy Spirit. So they changed the structure, and in that they spent a lot of time on Jesus. We know that the Apostles' Creed, when it talks about Jesus, it says Jesus was born of a Virgin Mary and suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, dead, and buried.
We don't get a lot of life in between there.
We get no life. We get no ministry. We get no gospel work. We get no miracles or healings. We get no justice side of Jesus. And so this committee really wanted to emphasize those pieces of Jesus. And so they spent a lot of time in a big chunk, and that's the first chunk in the statement of faith, is focusing on Jesus Christ and his ministry and how that is transformative for us as Christians. A third unique thing that I loved is that there is a unequivocal announcement that God makes everyone equal in God's image in this statement of faith, which was very powerful and very intentional in this statement of faith. A similar kind of justice issue that gets brought up in this statement of faith is that is creation care is named as a Christian practice, which feels pretty remarkable for the early 80s. Now we talk about, you know, stewardship of our climate much more than I think we were talking about in the 80s. But they say in the statement of faith, they name that we as Christians rebel against God. And one of the ways that we do that is we threaten death to the planet that is entrusted in our care. So they name this ecological stewardship as part of a value of Reformed faith, which I think is powerful. Like I mentioned earlier, they do include diverse language for God. So there is a line in the statement of faith that says, like a mother who will not forsake her nursing child and like a father who runs to welcome the prodigal home, God is faithful. And I love that. So they were very intentional with their language use. But maybe the thing that I personally found to be really powerful was for the first time in one of our statements of faith, we have a creed that names that women have a right and calling to ministry.
Mm.
So this was a big part of the committee's work. Up until this moment, the only talk about women in ministry in our Book of Confessions was from early confessions, like Scott's Confessions, which said that women could not be permitted to be ministers or to serve the sacraments. And even though by the 80s, women had been approved for ordination, women in seminary were experiencing an incredible amount of discrimination from their male colleagues. And part of that discrimination was going to the Book of Confessions and pulling out these former creeds that had said that women couldn't be ministers. And so in this confession, for the first time, they added a line that said, the same Spirit who claims us in the waters of baptism, feeds us with the bread of life and the cup of salvation, calls women and men to all ministries of the church. And that was a really significant statement to be made at this time in our church's history, and is something that I'm really proud of and grateful for.
And that you shared a little bit about that almost didn't quite make it into this document. Can you share a little bit about the idea of the two documents and how it merged into essentially one?
Yeah, so originally the committee thought that they would create a brief statement that could be used in worship, which is funny because it's too long to be used in worship. But the thought was that there would be a brief statement that could be used in worship like an affirmation of faith. And then that there would be this separate document, which would be more like a question and answer style that could be used in education. And originally, while they were drafting that document for worship, there were lots of things that made the cutting block, things that got pulled out, things that they thought that's too long, or that we're trying to keep it trim, or things that the committee disagreed on that they would say, well, let's put this in the second document and we'll add more information about it. And one of those things was clear affirmation of women in ministry. So it took years for this statement of faith to be written. And in 1988, so 5 years after it had started, they finally had a draft that they approved of. And as soon as they had a draft, the question was raised, are we now starting on the second draft? And at that time, the committee members were afraid that if they started on a second document, it just would fall apart, right? That it would open up a can of worms and it would fall apart. So the committee voted and said, no, we're not going to do a second document. We're just going to stick with this and this, we'll call it good. And the committee went to bed. And the next morning at breakfast, the women on the committee had conversations and just lamented that this statement about women in ministry had not been included. And they called a meeting that following morning and they said to their male colleagues that they had been willing to make lots of edits in the original document around women because they were promised that there would be a second document that declared women capable and called to ministry. And they felt like if there was not going to be a second document, then there had to be some edit in this original worship script that would name that. And fortunately, their male colleagues heard them and agreed and respected and said, you're right, it needs to be included. And so they added that one line about the Spirit calls women and men to all ministry of the church. And from there, everyone said, okay, now we're done.
Woo!
I know. Thanks be to God. Thanks be to God.
I just cannot imagine being on a committee for that long. So
me either.
Big thank you 40 years later to the people who were on this committee and pushed this through.
Yes.
The brief statement of faith for me has always not had a really exciting title like some of the others we're looking at.
Right.
I feel like Confession of 1967 really, you know, you feel like you kind of get the idea of what it's going to be about. You know, Belhar and Barman both have some names in them, but this one is just as exciting. So thank you so much for coming to chat about it with me today.
Yeah.
Any other things you'd like folks to know about this brief statement of faith?
I think one of the things that we ended on in our Credo class was this idea that the writers of the statement of faith really wanted those of us in the pews to be able to claim and say what it is that we believe and to have some conviction around that. They were proud to be Presbyterians. They were proud that their denomination had come back together and had reunited. They felt like there was hope on the horizon and that the Presbyterian Church had something good to say and offer the world theologically. And they wanted people to have that language in their heads and in their hearts so that they could share it. And so my charge to all of you listening is to think about what it is that you believe and maybe borrow some language from this brief statement of faith. But to like those original committee members and like our Presbyterian friends who went before us, to not be afraid to speak with conviction and to say out loud who we believe God to be, because I agree with the committee members. I think the Presbyterian Church has something to offer, and I think we have something to say to a hurting and seeking world. And so I hope as you learn about all of these statements of faith that it inspires you to say out loud what it is that you believe a little bit more often.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining me. Friends, thanks for joining us. I hope you'll join me next week as I sit down with Reverend Natalie Owens Pike to talk about the Belhar Confession.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dombroff.